From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of July 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities. Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University will be here to discuss the agricultural energies and the conditions on the ground in the northwestern part of his state and throughout the western Corn Belt. And then Don Day will help us close out our time together by taking a look at the weather forecast right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, September corn today at $5.97 a bushel, up 17. The $6.75 settlement price for the December up 17 as well. And March at $6.07.5, up 16¾ cents. The August soybeans $15.32¾, 59¾ higher. And the November at $13.83¾, 37¾ cents a bushel higher for the day. Bean meal up $24.90 a ton at $472.40. The bean oil at $60.42, up 41 cents. A soft red winter wheat $8.33¾ cents, up 33¾ cents, and the hard red at $8.77, 37¼ cents higher, both of those in the September contract. Live cattle futures at $142.37½, 97½ cents lower. Feeders at $180.42½, down $2.25, and the lean hogs at $93.65, 47½ cents lower on the day. The crude oil at $95.20 a barrel, down $1.50. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $3.52. That's about 6 cents higher for the day. And gasoline settled at $3.08¼. That's 3¼ cents lower on this Tuesday afternoon. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to take a look at what's, well, I guess a follow-through Tuesday, Wayne, instead of a turnaround Tuesday. A couple of good days in the market to start things out this week.
It sure was. I'll tell you what, Todd, it was exciting. We didn't know if we would see follow-through today, but the overnight weather continues to show some problems. Too much rain in some areas, not enough in others, and some real warm weather following this on up, too. So that, and then the Russians didn't hurt anything with their idea of making an announcement to have safe lanes and then bombing missiles and stuff into the infrastructure, some of the grain elevators there. So that basically changed some of the people's ideas that they were going to get a lot more grain out of the Ukraine here in the near future.
Indeed, that has changed the discussion points in Ukraine and Russia as they bombed Odessa over the weekend and Mykolaiv, both export elevator facilities. Earlier in this week, I'm wondering, you mentioned the weather. It is dry out west.
Yeah, boy, and those fires seen out there, unbelievable what some of the areas are looking at along those lines. But that, and then again, we had our crop ratings. They dropped down, and then we said Michael Cordner cut the corn yield 2 bushel, cut it from 177 down to 175, and the beans 0.5 bushel. So, with all those things put together, why we saw a little bit of short covering today. Unfortunately, the volume wasn't quite what it's been up to in the last few days, but a rally is a rally, and we'll sure be glad to take it. Looks like the rain, unfortunately, is going to stay a little bit south of us, coming in to add into stuff that way. But I guess I'm sort of glad I'm not in St. Louis and that, 4 to 9 inches down there. So
yeah, that's an unbelievable number and just really awful for them. Do you expect follow-through in the overnight trade and tomorrow's trade again?
From what we're looking at right at the moment and the way things are going, I think maybe we'll just see a little consolidation, but I would hope to see these markets maybe hold here. They did come back and recover and closed over some key points here along the way. We saw a couple of the people out there saying, they had some stops in to cover some of their hedges here and take profits on them that they still have and protected those. So, we did, as far as chart-wise, why we did, break through and close at some good levels. So I think we can maybe see, these markets hold together.
And the November beans, they gapped higher today, at least on the daily charts. That's good news, I guess.
A gap higher and holding it here. Just hope we don't go to try to fill it tonight.
Indeed. Hey, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of Monday morning, 62% of the corn crop around the nation had silked. The rolling five-year average is 70%. 13% of that crop is in the dough stage. The five-year average is 15%. And the condition of the crop, 48% good, 13% excellent, for a total of 61% good to excellent. That's down from the previous week of 51 and 13, so 3 points lower in the combined rating. Soybeans now at 64% blooming, on average 69% over the 5 years. Setting pods, 26%, the rolling five-year average, 34%, and condition of the crop, 49% good, 10% excellent. That's down 2 percentage points from the 61% last week to 59% in the two categories this week. 77% of the wheat harvest is now complete. The rolling five-year average is 80%. Now, here are the statisticians in Minnesota, Illinois, and Iowa with updates from their regions.
This is Melissa Bond, Statistical Assistant for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crop progress and condition report. Fieldwork included cutting hay as well as insecticide and fungicide applications. Topsoil moisture condition rated 12% very short, 26% short, 61% adequate, and 1% surplus. Subsoil moisture condition rated 11% very short, 25% short, 63% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn silking or beyond was 66%, 4 days behind last year and 3 days behind the five-year average. 8% of the corn crop has reached the dough stage, 5 days behind last year and 2 days behind average. Corn condition rating was 80% good to excellent. 72% of soybeans were blooming, 1 week behind last year and 2 days behind average. 32% of the soybean crop was setting pods, 5 days behind last year and 1 day behind the five-year average. Iowa's soybean condition rating was 75% good to excellent. 77% of the state's second cutting of alfalfa hay was complete, with the third cutting underway at 3%. All hay condition rated 66% good to excellent. Pasture condition rated 50% good to excellent. Some producers already had to begin supplementing with hay. Flies and above average heat and humidity were stressing livestock, with cattle still struggling with pink eye. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Bond.
This is Mark Schleusener, Illinois State Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Rainfall was slightly below average last week, and temperatures were slightly above normal. Rainfall averaged nearly 1 inch across the prairie state, and temperatures averaged 78.8 degrees. That was 2.3 degrees above normal for the week. There was an average of 5.6 days suitable for field work across Illinois, and topsoil moisture was reported as 16% very short, 19 short, 60 adequate, and 5% surplus as of Sunday. 81% of corn acres are now silking in Illinois. That compares to 89% 1 year ago and 80% for the five-year average. 17% of corn acres have reached the dough stage. The condition of the Illinois corn crop was reported as 12% very poor to poor, 17% fair, and 71% good to excellent. Soybeans are now blooming on 55% of acres, compared to 75% last year and 69% normally. 20% of acres are setting pods. Soybean conditions were rated 9% very poor to poor, 30% fair, and 61% good to excellent. Turning now to hay, the second cutting of alfalfa hay is 87% finished compared to 84% normally, and the third cutting of alfalfa hay is 10% complete. Finally, pasture conditions were rated 24% very poor to poor, 30% fair, and 46% good to excellent. In other news, NAS is mailing out questionnaires for the August Ag Yield Survey. Results will be published on August 12. I would like to thank all the people that responded to the Crop Progress and Condition Survey this week. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office. Minnesota had 5.7 days suitable for field work during the week. And on the weekend, rain provided much needed moisture in some areas, but more rain would be welcome throughout most of the state. Topsoil moisture supplies rated 7% very short, 17% short, 70% adequate, and 6% surplus. Corn silking was at 49%, that's 6 days behind average. Corn condition was 2% very poor, 6% poor, 29% fair, 53% good, and 10% excellent. Soybeans blooming or beyond reached 69%, that's slightly behind the five-year average. Soybeans setting pods reached 18%. Soybean condition was 2% very poor, 4% poor, 32% fair, 52% good, and 10% excellent. All hay condition was rated at 1% very poor, 4% poor, 19% fair, 61% good, and 15% excellent. And lastly, pasture condition was rated 2% very poor, 6% poor, 23% fair, 57% good, and 12% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress. It's a Tuesday. We always check in on the agricultural energies. Today, we'll talk with Dan O'Brien. He's at Kansas State University in the far northwestern part of Kansas there in Colby at the campus there. Hey, thank you so much for being with us. Things are not good in your part of the world, at least as it relates to moisture and dry weather, heat, and just drought. Can you tell me what conditions are like, please?
Well, until the last couple of days, we ag producers in the western third of Kansas, down on into Oklahoma, Texas, on up into a good swath of Nebraska, were all exceedingly dry, hot and dry. The high temps, 100 plus, was coming right during at least the front end of what was intended to be corn pollination for those crops, it'd be bad enough to have high temperatures when you had adequate subsoil to have the plant functioning decently, and just looking at temperatures and how it might affect pollen dropping and desiccation of that, et cetera. But this was a tough enough situation in this more western part of the Corn Belt that the plant itself was short of moisture in a good number of cases, at least as I've seen as I've been around this area. Moisture was tough enough that even the putting out of a tassel was under duress. So there'll be some damage there under irrigation, which of course is important in this part of the world. We have substantial non-irrigated and irrigated crops. We had seen either situations where the draw of moisture was enough that limited irrigation wells, 200 and 300 gallons per minute, were having a difficult time keeping up. In areas such as in northwest Kansas, where there are set water allocation, i.e. pumping limits, I talked with a number of producers that had been running ahead of this, I guess, time during the calendar, trying to keep their crops going under the heat, and then were in essence applying to RMA to take whatever limited water that they still had and apply it to less than a full pivot. And do they cut down to half? I think that's generally probably the mindset of a lot of them, that if they don't feel they have enough water to make it through the rest of the marketing of the crop year with the full 125 acre center pivot coming into play, then they cut back to 65, 62, something like that, acres or less, basically to still come in and get a crop. Of course, that's an irrigated issue with RMA. Then you're not if you're unable to continue to fully water that crop, then it becomes an insurability issue, and so honestly, we were getting requests in northwest Kansas, southwest Kansas, and then probably to our neighbors north and south and into Colorado to write letters from extension specialists to RMA, to crop insurance companies, to basically state that, yeah, things are tough and they don't have adequate water supplies to continue to fully water those center pivot irrigated crops, most of them corn, for the rest of the marketing, for the rest of the production year.
Do you have 40% of a crop, 60% of a crop total, or something less than that?
Oh, you know, it's really difficult to see what the objective truth is when you're seeing evidence in small portions that it's a complete loss. But I think overall, by the time you back into this and try to be objective in the region and realize that not everybody's the same, I would not be surprised if we're at least down 25, 30, 40%. And if heat continues, and it is projected beyond this moisture, a little bit of cool weather we've got now, if it continues into August, which that's the forecast, then you know, we'd be probably happy, not happy, but thankful to get 50 to 60% of what we had originally intended.
Now let's turn your attention to the part we're supposed to talk about today, which is the agricultural energies. You always put some numbers together for me. What do you see this month?
Well, you know, and I would say that what we were just talking about will likely affect the corn market. It's going to, and that primary corn input price will be at play in terms of determining the profitability of ethanol plants for the rest of the year. The numbers we have now, and looking at corn prices going into ethanol plants, and corn prices going in, and DDG and ethanol prices coming out, and kind of focusing on the Iowa areas, Iowa and your part of the world there in Illinois, again, Central Corn Belt is kind of a bellwether. We had seen corn prices about a week or so ago, earlier in the month, get up to about 782. In the most recent set of numbers, we're looking at about 738 as a corn input price there in Iowa for the week ending July the 22nd. DDG prices had dropped from about 286 down to 220. Well, down to about. Again, 220, 203, something like that. The ethanol break-even cost, $2.69 per gallon, and the July selling price so far, on average, about $2.48.5. So, Todd, as you and I have talked about these things on a monthly basis, to have a $2.48.5. Ethanol price at least gets us in the ballpark to have a fighting chance. We were seeing below two for a good long while, but of course that's all changed now. So if you have a break even cost of $2.69 and a selling price for ethanol and a selling price of $2.48.5, you're losing about 21 cents a gallon. And of course, we have seen that type of a figure by these same estimates for a while now, we must be seeing ethanol plants that have that are of larger scale that have that are more fully able to take advantage of the different size economies and efficiencies therein. They're probably breaking even, making money. An average plant, maybe older technology, et cetera, probably still losing some amount in all of this. But we're not showing. I guess the moral of the story is we're not showing great profits right now, with regard to ethanol. And that, by at least an average plant size figure, we're losing about 10 to 20 cents a gallon.
On the flip side, if they're incorporated very deeply into an oil industry side, it probably doesn't matter as much.
It may not. Again, as they're tied in with, depends. You and I can name the countries, the companies that have ethanol plants, and we see their retail outlets. So again, somewhat driven by necessity by RFS rules in terms of the percent blends. I did see numbers here just with in preparing for this. I think the average blends are over 10%, 10 to 12, 13% or something. I'll verify that and we'll talk about that again next time. So the blending is happening. Gasoline demand certainly been running strong. One way to look at it, at this situation, is that, so if we're using, let's say, 10% of blended of the motor fuel that we're buying on average in most cases is ethanol. Well, what if ethanol wasn't there and the regular gasoline supply that we have, which is constrained for a number of reasons that are well documented, where would we be without ethanol to supply 10% of the quantity of this? That we're already at pretty high retail gasoline prices without that supply, that 10% wedge that ethanol provides. Then it's a matter of where, on a supply demand basis, where prices would go, and they'd be just that much higher, very likely.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next month.
Thanks, Todd. Take care.
You too. That's Dan O'Brien. He's with Kansas State University Extension. Don Day now joins us from Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. Thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about the dry weather conditions in the far western Corn Belt.
Well, yeah, that is certainly a concern now, and I think will be over the next week or so. Although cooler conditions are moving into the entire Corn Belt, especially the western Corn Belt here over the next few days, that's going to bring some relief. The amount of shower and thunderstorm activity that's going to be associated with that cooler air is going to be kind of widely scattered and isolated. So the rain chances in Iowa, parts of eastern Nebraska, eastern South Dakota, there's going to be rain chances, but we're not expecting widespread good soaking rains, kind of some scattered shower and thunderstorm activity. The concentration of the deeper moisture and the heavier thunderstorm activity is going to be kind of where it's been, and that's right along that Interstate 70 corridor. Very heavy rains in Missouri and southern Illinois and southern Indiana here recently. There's going to be an axis of concentrated monsoonal moisture right along that I-70 corridor here for the next 7 days. So the northern and western Corn Belt areas are just going to be seeing this moisture bypassing to the south.
Well, that's not good news for that part of the country or for the area where they've had so much rainfall, that St. Louis, southern Illinois, parts of Missouri, 8 to 12 inches overnight last night. They won't be looking for more. However, in August, we probably would like some rainfall. What do you see for the Corn Belt?
Well, I do see heat returning. Right now, the center of the heat has been split up to the Pacific Northwest and the West Coast, and very warm conditions in the southeastern United States. But that Pacific Northwest high that's bringing heat to Seattle and Oregon is going to migrate back into the nation's midsection by the middle of next week. So we're going to get some really warm temperatures come in. And again, I think that western Corn Belt area is an area that we're really going to be watching, because I think there's not only going to be not a lot of rain, but a lot of heat will be building back in midweek next week. That may be followed by some rain and some cooler weather, but there's going to be the next 7 to 10 days here, Todd, where that western and northwest Corn Belt areas are going to be stressed.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. You can hit the podcast page there as well. To subscribe to our podcast at places like Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Spotify, and many more, or just search us out in your favorite podcast application. The theme music for the Closing Market Report is written, performed, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.